Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Poi Trezeguet sulla destra, la palla spistata, Nedved, attenzione, cerca il fondo, pallonetto, poi arriva l'altra, Del Piero, gol! Gol! Gol di Trezeguet! Zidane, le falcate, Vigo anticipato, palla che sembra essere buona ancora per Del Piero, attenzione Del Piero contro Hierro, una serie di dribbling, lo fa cadere, gol! Alex Del Piero raddoppia, ha giocato.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Greatest Games on Football Ramble Daily in association with the Blizzard. My name is Marcus Speller. Opposite me is Jonathan Wilson. And joining us today is one Andy Brassel, of course, a member of the Football Ramble Daily Parish. Andy, bloody good to have you here.
Bloody good to be here.
You know these surroundings well, my good man.
I do.
Yes, indeed. Well, let us go straight to the game that you've picked today. It's the Champions League semi-final in 2003, second leg between Juventus and Real Madrid in Turin. Juventus, of course, would go on and face Milan in the final at Old Trafford for the first all-Italian affair in the final of the Champions League. But why, Andy, why have you chosen this game?
Because it's very Juventus in the Champions League. Juventus have often been one of the most stylish, arresting teams in the Champions League. And ultimately, they don't get it done. I mean, you mentioned the final there. It's still incredible to me that you're talking about a club that only have two European Cup stroke Champions League titles. And if ever there was a semi-final second leg that would convince you that a team were such worthy winners, then this would be it. But there are so many other angles to it, I think. The fact that it was Nedved's best moment and worst moment, which I know we'll come to. And if we start from the very beginning, let's talk about the Stadio delle Alpi as well, because of course the current Juventus stadium, under which have enjoyed fantastic success, is on the same site. It's still bloody difficult to get to, but it's so much more loved than the delle Alpi was before, because the new Juventus stadium, the new Allianz, is kind of based on an English stadium, really, isn't it? It's penned in.
Pretty
it's very
boxy
tight.
And yeah.
Yeah, it's smaller than they could have made it.
Close because, to the pitch.
Yeah, they wanted it to be intimidating, noisy, and they wanted it to fill up every single week. And it's proved a huge financial and ideological success for them, really.
And they moved into the Delhi Alpi. It was the World Cup in 1990 it was built for, wasn't it?
Exactly.
They played at the Comunale before that.
Exactly. And the thing is with the Delhi Alpi, it was considered the opposite of its modern counterpart, in that sight lines were poor. It's really long way away from the pitch.
And it was cold and windy. They just felt a cold stadium whenever they were there.
And they never absolutely sold it out, did they?
No, that's the thing, Marcus, because I think if you look at, across like Juventus's really great spell in the Champions League. So if you go like mid-90s to mid-noughties.
Oh, they were... Yeah, just to cut in.
They were fantastic.
To say they've only won those two titles, yeah, it's mad when you think about it.
And yet so many of those games, like big games, they could play Bayern Munich in the knockout rounds and get under 20,000. This is how much this stadium was absolutely detested. This game against Real Madrid was an exception. And if you go back and watch the highlights, or if you YouTube the highlights of this, it's the first thing that strikes you, the noise. Because having that sort of energy, that sort of warmth, it's not as if it's uncommon at Juventus games, because when they've, on the odd occasion, played home games at the San Siro, when you see them going away, of course, Juventus teams, Juventus fans are passionate and get behind their team. But there was never this click with the Dele Alpi. But on this night, it was different.
Yeah. So, I mean, it was at a time when Real Madrid were the Galacticos. It was that era, Jonathan. When
the holders.
They were the holders as well. Of course, they'd won in 2002. They had Raul, they had Ronaldo, who was on the bench for the second leg. He was injured.
Which I think was actually very significant.
It was, yeah.
Because Ronaldo, the previous round, I mean, both teams had struggled a little bit in the second group stage. So this was a time when there was a first group stage, top two went through into the second group stage, and then the top two of those four groups went through into the quarterfinals. Mm-hmm. And both Juve and Real Madrid had gone through second in that group. So, I mean, Real Madrid's record, I think they only won two games in that second group stage.
But a very late goal against Dortmund, was it?
Yeah, they needed a late goal against Dortmund. I think an injury time goal against Dortmund to make it through. Mm. Juve had lost both games against Manchester United in that group stage.
Yeah.
United then played Madrid in the quarterfinal, and that's the game when Raul is brilliant in the first leg and Real Madrid won 3-1. Mm. And then... I don't want to put it down to this, but all I would say is I interviewed Ronaldo on Easter Sunday.
Yes.
And he hadn't played for a long time.
It's no coincidence, is it?
And then his next game, he scores a hat-trick at Old Trafford.
There I see.
Look, all I'm doing is giving you the facts in a particular order in a particular tone of voice. I'm not telling you what to think, but I just sort of think, you know, like a couple of tips and, you know.
Jonathan, I think 2 and 2 makes 4 very much so in that equation.
And he scored the hat-trick at Old Trafford, and although they ultimately lost the game 4-3, they were never...
Was Old Trafford applauding you or him?
Well, see, it's hard to tell.
It was hard to tell.
With that information coming to light.
I think because I'm so naturally modest, a lot of people assumed it was Ronaldo.
Yeah. But you have a mode because you've kept very quiet up until now. and that shows what great character he was.
Applauded off when he got substituted, I don't know, 10 minutes from time or something. And a low United subsequently came back into it and won the game.
The game was gone ages
it was.
Before.
There was.
So it's a great Real Madrid side, you know. Figo and, as you say, Raul, Zidane, you know,
Guti,
wonderful
Cambiasso.
Man. Yeah, Hierro at the back, Casillas in goal. But Juventus as well, Andy. Buffon in goal, Thuram, Zambrotta, Takanardi, Edgar Davids, Pavel Nedved, as you say, David Trezeguet and Del Piero and so on.
I kind of do wonder if this was a great Real Madrid side or a Real Madrid side full of great players. And I think
this
there
is a fair
slight definition.
Suggestion.
And,
because we've talked about, I think there's a... an intimation of what's to come in that we talked about Ronaldo being injured, missing the second leg.
Yes.
Far, far, far more significant is McAlealy is injured.
Huge.
And this is sort of, what happens if you take McAlealy out of this team? Oh, it's a little bit vulnerable.
Yes, of course.
And people probably should have noticed that before they sold him.
Yeah, well, I mean, Zidane famously said, you know, Perez has sold the engine of the Rolls Royce or something.
Yeah, he's our best player. Yeah.
But this was Real Madrid's side. You had that odd period where, so we've seen Real Madrid win the first side to defend the Champions League and obviously won 3 in a row in recent years. But you had a long period where they couldn't get past, was it the second round or the quarterfinal? They really stumbled. Then under Mourinho, I think they got to the semi-final.
Yeah, they had 7 seasons when they didn't get to the quarterfinal in a row.
That's right. So it was sort of that sort of period before winning the 3 in a row. You had this side as well, who won it in 2000, I think.
98, 2000 and 2002.
Yeah, so they beat Juventus in 98. Yeah. Mijatovic scoring the winner. They beat Valencia 3-0. Was that in 02 or 2000?
2000 in Paris, and then they, in 02 they beat Leverkusen in Glasgow.
Exactly.
Famous Zidane goal.
It's interesting you bring that up, Marcus, because and the 98 final with Juventus in particular, because it's good to bring together these two strands of Juventus in the Champions League, yes. I think. In the back half of the 90s, Juventus, under Lippi, in his first spell at the club, Marcello Lippi, they could have easily been another Ajax or another Bayern from the 70s. You know, there's strong argument that they should have won those 3 years in a row. Of course, they did win in 96 against Ajax. Lost in 97 against not an incredible Dortmund side, a good Dortmund side, but not an incredible Dortmund side. And then they lost to Real Madrid in 98. Now, those were both matches, especially in the second halves of those games, that they really dominated. And as I said, you're not looking at a great Dortmund side or a great Real Madrid side. That Dortmund side in 97 finished third in the Bundesliga. The Real Madrid side finished fourth and had to get a little leg up as the holders. Of course, this was a thing that would run and run until UEFA eventually decided that the holders should automatically qualify for the Champions League almost 10 years later, wasn't it? So Lippi had some unfinished business with the Champions League, and this was the second really great Juventus side in a European Cup Champions League context that he constructed.
You can't emphasise enough two heavyweights. I mean, it's funny with Juventus because for me, they were often the team to beat. I know in a previous pod when, was it John Bruin talking about Manchester United beating Juventus 3-2, I think that was the game we covered.
Which was not the
semi-final.
Not the 98-9 semi-final, but the group game in 97-8.
Yeah, it was almost Ferguson sort of getting that monkey off his back about Juventus. You know, this was a side with a lot of quality and so on and so forth. But Andy, I'm interested to say about the Real Madrid, you know, they were a side of great players, not a great team. But they were the holders.
Yeah, they were. They were, and they had the quality to make the difference in individual moments. And, you know, there were reminders of that throughout this game. The Zidane goal right near the end that brought Real Madrid back into it and gave them a little glimmer of hope about going through. Of course, they'd won the first leg 2-1. When Zidane scored in this second leg, they were 3-0 down. And then, of course, you look at Figo. You look at the fact that they felt duty bound, as Jonathan said, to throw Ronaldo on, despite the fact he had that calf injury.
Well, we'll get to the second leg in the second half. But in the first leg, Real Madrid did win the game 2-1.
Yeah, they did.
And there was a bit of controversy with, was it Roberto Carlos' goal?
Yeah, there was.
Well, let's talk about the first two goals first, though.
So, away,
the first goal is a real classic Ronaldo goal. Mm. Yeah. Well, you know, if you say describe Ronaldo goal, okay, it might start with him beating two men or three men or four men, but it will always finish with him lining up the keeper, sitting the keeper on his arse and putting it past him.
That's right.
And this was a lovely little touch from Morientes to set him through.
Yeah.
And runs on. And just the inevitability that he was going to score.
It depends which stage of Ronaldo's career with the men beforehand. Yeah. Early on in his career, he'd beat a couple of men. Later on, it would just be putting the keeper on his arse. But as you say, either way, the end of it would always happen.
It's an interesting point you make about Morientes as well, who was an unused substitute in the second leg. And they could have done with a bit of that guile. I mean, he was perennially underrated at the Bernabeu. Of course, you could say the biggest Champions League contribution Morientes ever made was against Real Madrid when he was on loan to Monaco against them, when he scored in both legs and knocked them out in the quarterfinals in 2004.
Yeah, well, yeah, they got their come up. Yeah,
they did get their come up.
I suppose so. Yeah, he must have enjoyed that somewhat.
But that's the sort of, you know, it's a classic thing of clubs with loads of money don't really appreciate the talent they produce themselves.
Yeah, that is true. And
they'd rather play the flashy player they paid 30 million for than the kid who's got everything.
Well, you could say Real Madrid in this era kind of pioneered that, really, didn't they?
Yeah. So that was Ronaldo scores his goal.
And then right on half-time, Trezeguet equalises from a nice little cross from Del Piero.
Mm-hmm.
So 1-1. And then, the controversial winner. So there's a Dan corner, which is sort of half-cleared, comes to Roberto Carlos, who sort of on the top corner of the box strikes it through a crowd of players, goes in the bottom corner, and it looks like a really nice goal. So I think if you watch it with modern eyes, you don't really see anything wrong.
No, I think that's
but
it.
You suddenly realise Landsman's flag's up.
Yeah.
Because there's four Real Madrid players in offside positions. Now, whether they're interfering with the keeper's eye line or not is an argument that you can,
I mean, we still
have forever. But certainly, in the context of the time, allowing that goal, I think, was controversial.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think nowadays, there may be a little suggestion nowadays, and I know the offside law, well, with VAR is...
Personally, I think if a player's in the six-yard box and he's offside, then he's interfering.
Yeah, I mean, there's four of them. I don't know how that can't distract the goalkeeper.
Yeah, but certainly back then, I think it was a surprise that the goal was given.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm. Absolutely. And, you know, it was one of those goals from Roberto Carlos, which... makes us think that he scored every week.
Yeah, that's
which
right.
is clearly not the case,
as we saw
in the second leg.
But did you think, though, that Real Madrid would go on and win this game? Because they would have been favourites.
Yes.
They were the holders. And, of course, it was Milan who were waiting in the final, a classic Milan side.
Yeah.
Again, I mean, you look at the names in Juventus and Real Madrid, Milan were there. Mm. And I think perhaps, maybe people thought Real Madrid versus Milan would have been the two best sides.
Yeah.
At the time in the continent,
maybe, but that would be looking at Milan in a European Cup context because
fair enough.
You know, Milan finished third in the league that season. The good thing for Juventus going into the second leg of this is they'd already through a 2-2 draw with Perugia, although obviously they would have liked to win it more in style, had won the league. The previous weekend. So that was a huge weight off their shoulders. They could fully concentrate on this. They were in a situation where the Dele Alpi was full. So, of course, it's not easy against Real Madrid. The fitness issues are a thing, though. As Jonathan was saying, Makalele being out completely. Ronaldo only left on the bench. They could bring back Raul, of course. He missed the first game because he had appendicitis. Mm-hmm. But he never really got into the game.
No, absolutely. All right, let's talk about the game in the second half.
Figo che ha segnato due gol in questa edizione della Champions League contro il Genk, soprattutto contro il Manchester United nella gara del Bernabeu. Parte, attenzione, para Buffon! Para Buffon! E probabilmente questo è un intervento decisivo.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the year in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
Zambrotta, buone, buona, buone con il Contasini per Neves,
Welcome back to Greatest Games, everybody. Now then, It's the Dele Alpi, as we've mentioned before. It's, of course, an evening kickoff for the Champions League. And Real Madrid missing one or two key players, but there's still quite a lot of talent in that side, Andy.
Yeah, there is. There's no doubt about that. And we talked about Zidane. We talked about Figo. And, yeah, quality throughout. Raul coming back. But I think what was the biggest theme...
Cambiasso in there as well.
Absolutely.
Is it just me, or did Real Madrid just never understood Cambiasso?
I know what you mean.
They kept sticking him out on the left. What are you doing? But if you don't have Makélélé, play him in the middle.
I know, it's madness. And also,
how on earth are you trying to get Conceição and Figo in the same side? Why are you trying to play two Portuguese right-wingers at once? Is he Portuguese or is he Brazilian? Have I fucked that up?
Brazilian.
Cool. Forget that bit.
Carry on, though.
They were doing what they often tried to do with so many stars and sort of use Conceição and Cambiasso to try and sit. It didn't fit together very well, and there was no protection for the defence. But having said that, they didn't defend very well either.
Yeah.
And Iker Casillas didn't have a great game either.
An example of how they can't defend is when you get Del Piero winning a big back post header. What on earth is going on there?
You see, that's the incredible thing, isn't it, Jonathan? We think of the craft in this Juventus side, and the first goal, you've got
11 minutes in.
Pavel Nedved out on the right doing his sort of Dennis Wise bit. Back to Fashanu. No, it's not Fashanu. It's Del Piero at the far post.
Peas in the pod.
Pretty much. knocks it down for Terry Gibson. Stroke.
Yeah.
Trezeguet to sweep it in. And I think the fact that Real Madrid are taken so aback by the directness of this. The second goal, which we'll get to, is more Del Piero.
Mm-hmm.
But that first one, it could have been out of the Wimbledon or Watford or Sheffield Wednesday playbook.
Well, it's a very deep cross. And I don't know why Salgado is so central. I don't know how he's got dragged so far across, because he then can't get across. So Del Piero is unmarked to head it back.
Well, he's ball watching, isn't he? And you're absolutely right to point that out, Jonathan, because Casillas gets a lot of stick for this goal. It's Salgado's fault.
No, I don't think it's Casillas' fault.
Yeah, Salgado's got dragged towards the ball, and that, I think, has had a knock-on effect on Hilgueri. He then can't get across to Trezeguet when he makes that sort of angled run across the near post.
Mm.
I didn't realise people blame Casillas. Well, because he went in the near post.
Certainly in Spain, yeah.
I think that's very harsh.
It is harsh, isn't it? I think it's worth, at this point, looking at the link between Trezeguet and Del Piero as well, because I think when we look at a lot of latter stages of the Champions League now, certainly Champions League finals, and this was by no means a great Champions League final when we eventually got to it. You think...
But it was bloody awful, Andy,
you think when the worst recipe for a Champions League final, when players are exhausted anyway, is two teams from the same country playing each other. Yeah. And we saw that with Liverpool and Tottenham this year, didn't we? A really flat occasion where everyone's a bit tired and no one's prepared to dare because they're scared to make a mistake. But I think if you look at Juventus, what should have made them okay, and what definitely made them okay in the second part of this semi-final, is the fact that injuries can kind of work for you sometimes. And I think it's definitely worked for them, because you look at Trezeguet and Del Piero missed substantial chunks of the season. If you go back to the quarterfinal against Barcelona, Marcelo Zalaeta scored the winner, of course, in the Camp Nou in extra time against all the odds when they were down to 10 men.
It was incredible.
Edgar Davids had been sent off. But the fact that they played significantly less games than they might have done this season, I think gave them a little bit more. I mean, Trezeguet got injured in pre-season and it took him a long time to get right. Del Piero got injured in, I think, about October, November, and missed 2 months. I mean, he still had a really good season in Serie A, 16-24, which is great. But the fact that they had this extra edge to them, and it's not just about Real Madrid's organisation. This was a Juventus side, and if we, again, for a minute, go back to that side in the late 90s, they were very experienced, polished side. Mm. There's no doubt about that. Of course, they changed a lot between 96 and 97 with Ravanelli and Vialli going and Vieri coming in, Del Piero being more prominent, Boxic being part of it. But I have to say, this Juventus side was far more dynamic and cut and thrust, and this really came through in this game.
How do you think Trezeguet and Del Piero worked almost like as a front two? I suppose. You know, Del Piero just off him, you know, that was the role he tended to.
Yeah, it's a classic partnership. Yeah. You've got the quick guy and the shorter, skillful guy. And obviously they're both more than that, but it's a very kind of typical. It's Eric Gates and Marco Gabbiadini.
I was about to say. Phillips and Quinn, Jonathan, why don't we bring that as well?
Well, Quinn wasn't quick.
Yeah, true. Yeah.
Seemed a bit silly now. But.
Don't tell him whose favourite Sunderland frontier should be. Come on.
This is part of his contract, isn't it? You have to mention
not many things that are off limits here.
But. Sorry, yeah. But it is pleasing to see a sort of almost like a proper front two partnership.
Right, that knockdown from Del Piero for first goal was very Niall Quinn, to be fair.
There so. You see. Well, I didn't say it for no reason, Andy. but it's nice, though, because you don't get front twos. You don't get the partnership now. It's usually the lone striker and the wingers either side, that kind of thing. But this was one of the top sides in the world then, and they were playing a front two. And as you say, it was that sort of classic combo, which worked very well for them. And you know, about sort of half an hour, whatever it was later, Alessandro Del Piero does get his goal to put Juventus 2-0 up on the evening.
Yeah, just inside the penalty box. And it was a bit like seeing an NBA great doing a crossover and putting a player on his backside. Because he put two players on their backsides in the same move. Completely wrong-footed Hierro and put him on his arse. And then did the same to Salgado, who, well, the ball was in the net before he could even fall onto his backside. Hmm. And that was at the near post, but there's absolutely no chance of...
Yeah, but the thing that struck me watching that back is it's just a long clearance to Migo Tudor.
Yes.
And the ball's in the air for a long, long time. How does Del Piero have time to take... Well, I mean, it's a beautiful touch to take the ball
touch
down,
is incredible,
but
yeah.
Why isn't somebody tight on him to stop him doing that? That's what I don't get.
Yeah, and that is the ball that Hierro should be coming to get, you could argue.
Yeah, it just makes no sense that the ball can travel that far, you know, that high, and, I mean, basically defenders should be beating Del Piero in the air, but at the very least he should be stopping him, taking it down as he did.
You know what, I think we're maybe not giving Del Piero enough credit there, because I think what's noticeable is how he completely changes direction before he takes the touch. So he shuffles as if he's going outside and then shuffles back inside. It's all in the hips, really, before he actually brings the ball down. So I think that does Hierro.
It's the thing that occurred to me. I mean, you're almost certainly right. But the thing that occurred to me, and it's a danger, you know, when you talk about games from the past and you sort of inevitably talk about the goals. Of course we do.
Yeah.
What we don't see is the half hour between the two goals when Trezeguet and Del Piero were dragging Real Madrid all over the place and wearing them out. And you know, maybe that's where we're not giving the Juve forward on enough credit. That they'd sort of worn them down to 2 minutes before half time. And maybe they do get a bit sloppy. That's just, you know, there's a booming high ball. That's ours. And then Del Piero, you know, great touch and, you know, the little shuffle of his hips as well, maybe just to throw them off.
Yeah, quite possibly. Also, we should say that I think it was between those two goals, Guti had a great chance for Real Madrid, and he sort of thinks he's offside.
Raul, it was in the end, I think.
Oh, was it? Okay.
He just like pokes it straight at Buffon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It could have changed the whole complexity of the game, but
it could have.
It seems a bit of an anomaly, though, really, in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah.
Because 2-0 at half time.
And then the momentum was with Juventus.
Oh, enormously. Yeah. I mean, when Del Piero scored that second goal, you know, bear in mind, it only takes, you know, one Real Madrid goal and it's all square again, it's all level. But again, the celebrations, the way it went in, it was just very much like, this is our night.
It's 80s Serie A, isn't it? With like everyone on the pitch, all the backroom staff jumping on Del Piero. And yeah, there is just such a sense of adrenaline, I think, coming from the stands. An occasion that you didn't get often enough at the old Delle Alpi. Just, as you say, a sense of being just taken away in the moment. Really.
Very much so, yeah. But then, of course, in the second half, Real Madrid get a penalty.
I think they have their chances, don't they? It sort of feels like a comfortable win. Well, and it kind of was, and yet.
Well, when I watched some of the match back, I was surprised actually with that chance in the first half, and then obviously with the penalty.
And Montero should be sent off.
Yeah, he should be sent off.
Already been booked. There's no, I mean, that's probably a red card anyway, but it's at the very least a yellow card.
But you remember.
Foul on Salgado, isn't it? Salgado?
For the penalty?
No, it's a
big Ronaldo.
Ronaldo. Because I think that's the thing that it's easy to forget about latter day Ronaldo. He's a bit heavier. He's not the player he was pre injury. But over that first 3-4 yards, he's still incredibly quick. It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
And you can't even blame Montero for it.
No.
It just, when he gets the ball and he moves towards the box, he's so quick. And I don't know. Maybe that's why the referees let Montero off. I agree with you. I don't think it's justifiable. But
well, on the basis of he is very quick, I'll let you off with that one.
There's also
well, it reminds me of Luke Moore doing a foul in a five-a-side tournament we did and going, ref, he's just too good for me.
Yeah, he's too quick for me. Yeah, that's right.
But Montero is sort of, you know, he's the sort of precursor to Fernandinho, just a player who commits an extraordinary number of fouls and yeah. Don't book him for it.
Yeah, it's an odd one, isn't it? It's like he's sort of slightly invisible.
Well, the thing about
Montero's
that is
allowed sort of four yellow cards before he gets sent off. And he still got sent off a lot.
Yeah.
The thing about that is even the mild-mannered old uncle that's Vicente del Bosque is brandishing his imaginary card on the touchline.
Yeah, because Ronaldo was brought on for about 52 minutes, I think. So obviously then he wins the penalty. Figo steps up.
It's not a good pen.
And Buffon saves it. It's not a great pen. It's
and
a
he's
nice
about player. 4 yards off his line when he saves it as well. So
but you expect Figo to... Because again, I still think a lot of people, in fact, probably myself included, if I can remember, you're watching that game thinking, this is a good Juventus side, but it's Real Madrid. They're the holders. They've got some of those players. Okay, here you go. They've got the penalty. They're finally going to start to get back in it. The penalty saved, and that's the moment, I think, where you think, this is Juventus, isn't it?
Well, it's a strangely poor bit of play, actually, isn't it, from both players, two of the absolute greats of all time, because Figo absolutely telegraphs the penalty, and Buffon absolutely telegraphs his reaction. Like, he's gone so early that you think, well, surely Figo's going to put it in the other corner. I mean, I'm not telling Luis Figo how to take penalties. I think the other thing to note is, as a precursor to what happens next, in the build-up to that, where it's Cambiasso, I think, who smuggles the ball through to Ronaldo in the first place. And you're right, Cambiasso gets let a little bit more off the leash in the second half as they're chasing the goal that they need. And Nedved, who's been... He's all about snap. He's quick. Like, to see a playmaker who's that quick is always exhilarating. A bit like Kevin De Bruyne nowadays, I suppose. But he snaps into challenges as well. And he knows he's on a booking from a previous round. And so he goes up towards Cambiasso, and just as he's about to make contact with Cambiasso, he sees Cambiasso's got in front of him. And Nedved puts his arms up and goes, no, I'm not touching him.
Mm.
And then Cambiasso gets it through. Ronaldo takes it past Montero, takes him down, and it's a penalty.
Yeah, interesting, especially as what's to come. Yeah. But Nedved then has his moment where he's kind of put through and finishes superbly.
The ball over the top's from Zambrotta. It's another straight ball, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
And it's a beautiful finish. He scores, game over. He jumps over the hoarding, celebrating to the fans. And that should have been the last thing that you really sort of say about Nedved on the night, because was he man of the match, was he? I mean, he was absolutely phenomenal.
I mean, this
night
was his year as well.
Yeah, he was a great player. Of course he was, but... And one can forget, because there's just so many other players, you know, you remember and so on. But Nedved was phenomenal. And as you say, Andy, it should have been his year in the Champions League. Man of the match performance in that second leg. Caps it off with a brilliant goal, because he was phenomenal all evening. And then, of course, gets a booking later on.
When the most heartbreaking booking since Gazza in the 1990 World Cup semi-final.
Or Roy Keane and Paul Scholes. Scholes' was later.
Can we say we've got slightly less sympathy for Roy Keane than we have for Gazza or Pavel Nedved? I think we can.
Well, Scholes, though, in that... I mean, oddly, they all happened in Turin, apart from...
I suppose...
No, they did. All those Ricards we're talking about all happened in that stadium, didn't they?
That's right, they did. I suppose the difference is in the reaction, isn't it?
I knew. Because they were through.
You just see Nedved, as soon as he's halfway through making the tackle...
Which is odd, McManaman, isn't it?
Yeah. Who thought it? Like an Englishman ruining a European Cup final at Old Trafford, eh? But he's not even fully made the tackle, Nedved, when he's thinking, oh, shit, I've done it here.
But I don't know why. He was obviously so pumped, maybe.
Yeah.
Because, as you say, he pulled out.
Full of adrenaline. From his soul, maybe.
I remember being gutted when that happened.
I just think it's so difficult to... not play a natural game.
Yeah, absolutely.
You just, you know, if you go in for that type of tackle, you go in for that type of tackle. I think you can't. It must be so difficult. I mean, he obviously was able to once to stop himself, but you can't play with that.
Mm.
But you know, Jonathan, it almost cost him, didn't it? Not making that tackle, because if Figo had scored the penalty,
which maybe kind of made him think, oh, I've just got to go in for these.
Yeah,
but at 3-0 up with McManaman, the ball's
three nil up. If you concede one, suddenly you're on a knife edge again.
No, I agree.
As they ultimately were.
Of course.
Very briefly.
But where the ball was on the pitch.
Yeah, it was like centre line.
I just remember watching it being so gutted.
And he was gutted.
He was magnificent.
You just see him like bend over to his haunches and go, oh, this is it, isn't it?
Yeah,
and
because they knew they were going through.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, some people may think, you know, Gazza getting that second book, and it was quite fanciful to think that he already had his mind, well, he didn't maybe not have his mind on the final. Well, he did.
No one wants to miss a third place playoff.
No, exactly, Andy. But Nedved and Juventus, I mean, despite that Zidane goal, they were going through. They were 3-0 up.
Well, I think it actually does hurt Nedved's reputation.
Yeah,
absolutely.
In that, had he played at Old Trafford and set up the winner or whatever,
yeah,
you'd think of him as 2002-03. Mm-hmm. That was Nedved's year. That was the year he won the Champions League and he was the best player in the competition. And now he's sort of like, oh, yeah, so he's the Czech bloke who played for Juve and he was pretty good. But people don't put him that level above.
Wesley Snyder never gets the credit for 2010, though, does he?
So. That's true, yeah.
But with you're right with Nedved. And then a year later at the Euros, the Czechs play the Dutch in their opening. It might have been the opening game of the tournament.
It wasn't the opening game of the tournament. It was their first game. The opening game of the tournament was Portugal v Greece.
Ah, right, you are. Yeah, of course, 2-1 Greece. But yeah, so the opening game of that group, which had Netherlands and France in, as well as Czech Republic. And I remember Czech Republic should have beaten the Dutch that night.
They were 2-0 up, weren't they?
No, that was later. They lost 1-0 through a late penalty. And I remember Nedved crashing one off the bar, and it was so close. And because they lost that game, then France beat them. And then they were out after their first two games. And it was a brilliant Czech side. No, Euro 2000 I'm talking about. Euro 2000. So it was around that time. So again, you're absolutely right, sorry, because they did go on in Euro 2004. But Euro 2000. And it's all those nearly moments for Nedved, because that should have been his tournament in Euro 2000. But of course, they went out early. And
well,
then,
in 2004, they end up going out to Greece in Porto in that ridiculous semi-final. Yeah.
You can make a strong argument, I think, that Czechs are the best team in Euro 2004. A strong
I would.
Argument.
No, I would. I went to that game in Porto thinking, I was watching the potential, the team were going to go on to win it, which I was, but it was the other team.
That is a question, isn't it? If you go further back in this Champions League run for Juventus, you think of Nedved's opener at Camp Nou, another fantastic goal that says, I own this pitch, basically. And then him ultimately deciding the semi-final against Real Madrid. If he goes on, as Jonathan says, and makes a contribution in Juventus winning the final at Old Trafford, and they win the Euros the following year. I mean, it's only a few little tweaks of history, and how differently would people see him if they'd have won those two trophies, if he'd have won those two trophies?
Because he was such a brilliant player. And then, as you already mentioned, Zidane scores.
So he squeezes a shot across Buffon in the far post.
Yeah, but I just remember thinking that was a consolation. In fact, the way Zidane reacts, it's almost like he thinks it's a consolation.
Well, as well, he's...
True, against his old team.
You know he's steaming mad inside because he got booed all night as well.
Yeah.
And no one broods like Zinedine Zidane. Certainly not Zinedine Zidane the player.
Yeah.
I mean, it's all bubbling under there, don't you, at all times with Zidane.
Absolutely. Yeah. And Juventus go through to the final, of course, play Milan at Old Trafford. It's a dreadful game and Milan went on penalties.
Shevchenko doing it for Lewandowski.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Of course, yeah.
He died the previous year.
Yeah.
Was it even that season? It was 2002 he died. Was it late? Yeah, it was probably 2002. It was that season, wasn't it? Yeah.
Are you asking me a question on Lobanovsky?
I was just being polite. To
He's thinking out loud. That's what he does. Yeah. But two marvellous teams. And lovely to mention Pavel Nedved, Andy. We appreciate that. So there we are, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much for listening to Greatest Games on Football Ramble Daily in association with the Blizzard. It's been a pleasure, Andy.
As always.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Jonathan.
Cheers. Thank you.
And we'll see you next week.
This was a Stakhanov production.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more.
and is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah,
you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to this show ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today.